My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. This is the continue. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. Very grateful for that. I'm a member of the Carl Room. I don't get to go by there that much, but last night they had their birthday night, and a guy I've been sponsoring for about, I don't know, about 17 years or so, got his 20-year medallion. That was kind of neat. It was a really wonderful experience, actually, going to birthday night, and they must have had a bunch of people. I don't know, it was 20, 25, 30 people, from 1 year all the way through getting up, and they all had just such wonderful, wonderful things to say. I was just listening to these people on birthday, and I said, man, these people are much more polished. They're better spoken than I am, that's for sure. They're just great listening to these people talk about what's happened to them over the years, and I just really appreciated going there. And you really get a sense. I don't know about you, but when I go to these, I don't go as much as I should go, but when I go to these birthday nights and I hear people, 1, 2, 5, 10 years speaking, it really gives you a real sense of what this thing is all about. It gives you a whole different perspective on things. It really, I'll tell you what it says to me. It tells me how important it is for me to have people in my life that have 1 year, 2 years, 3 months, 7 years, how really important it is to really understand what this thing is all about. Because no matter what happens to you here, and and there's wonderful benefits of this program, unfortunately or fortunately, and it's not necessarily a bad thing now, I always have to deal with my mind. And, no matter what, the Lord has done for me in my life, my mind is still here. It's present and accounted for. And, you can't rest on your laurels. You're headed for trouble if you do. And when I start getting the feeling, boy, I'll tell you, I got 31 years and I've finally graduated this thing and I'm doing okay now and I'm just flying along, I'm in big trouble. So it's really good for me to surround myself with people that have more time with me and with less time with me and just be in the middle of the pack there. So it's good to be here. We're on steps 8 and 9. I sort of say 8 and 9. I'll probably take 2 sessions to talk about them, but I want to say 8 and 9. I don't want to necessarily split them up, although you could, because 8 is sort of like really the list and looking at the list and getting ready with the list. They are separate steps. I don't want to make the mistake of making people believe that they're like all one clump step, because in a sense that sort of like could hurt you. And the reason it could hurt you, I say this now from my vantage point, is because some people, what all 8 calls for is really making a list. That's all it calls for, making a list, which is a big deal, believe it or not. It's a big deal. It's making a list, which really sort of springs from, but it's not exactly the same as your 4th step. But I think what happens with alcoholics, listen, fear runs our lives. Fear runs my life. So I'm all, I remember sitting in meetings, and this happened to me for many, many years. As a matter of fact, it wasn't only meetings. It was my life. Sitting in a meeting and thinking about something that happened yesterday, an hour ago, 3 hours ago, or 2 years ago. And I remember thinking about this thing over and over in my mind so much, because it so disturbed me, whatever it was, that I missed the entire meeting. And like 5 minutes before the meeting would stop, I'd all of a sudden hear something that was going on. I'd get momentary relief. Or I'd be sitting in a meeting, or not in a meeting, outside, and projecting about something that might happen a year from now, or 6 months from now, or 3 weeks from now. And just so engrossed in something that might never happen. I remember my sponsor once said, 9 out of 10 things that you think are going to happen never happen, and the one thing that does happen happens differently than you think it's going to happen. And I remember living a life. And, one of the things about this disease is, the first step, of getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. And one of the things that happens with this disease is, for an alcoholic's, an alcoholic's life seems the only normal one. So no matter how crazy we are and how sick we are and how anxious I am, to me, high anxiety, depression, self-pity, being scared seems absolutely normal. Because when that's the way you've been from the time you were like a unicelled animal, before you got out of the womb, you know what I mean, till 30 years old, you don't know anything else except worrying about what's going to happen in the future or what happened in the past. You know, you don't spend any time in the present. And so this concept of one day, one moment at a time, you know, just what's happening now. Which, well, you don't understand. What do you mean now? I mean, I'm not going to be able to make the mortgage at the end of the month, 6 months from now or 3 months. There's always something to worry about. And that's the way I was all the time. You know, so what happens is you sit there and you're trapped in this horrible, horrible situation, but you don't even know you're in a horrible situation because you're not thinking any differently than you always think. And your thinking is the problem. It's not the drinking anymore. It's the thinking is the problem. And you don't know how to get out of thinking because this is the way I've thought all my life. And if you think drinking, if you think you're compelled to drink, you got obsession. Man, wait till you get into the thinking deal. You know, I used to say to somebody, when I tried to explain my alcoholism, I guess in a comical sort of way to a non-alcoholic, I'd say, well, you know, if everybody is allotted in this world a certain quota of booze that you're allowed to drink, you know, everybody's got a certain quota. You got a quota, you know, whatever it is. I don't know, 10,000 gallons, whatever the deal is. You know? You know, I'll tell you how you know when you're an alcoholic. I did a couple of tours of the wine country with my wife, you know. I had quite a few years sober. I wouldn't suggest you do it when you have 390 days. She loves going with me on tours of the wine country because everybody gets, wherever you go, you get a glass, you know. They don't give you more than a glass. But so she'd always get me, she'd go up there and get, so I she'd get my glass. So she'd get two, you know. And, you can always tell the alcoholics, you know. I mean, you can sort of sense the alcoholics anyway because they're the guys. You see, what they do is they give you a lecture in the wine. Anybody ever been on a wine country tour? Yeah. Sonoma, Napa? They take you through with the vats, and you're standing next to a vat. There's this vat, it's about the size of this wall, and it says 50,000 gallons of Chablis. And the guy's giving a lecture, you know, on Chablis and 50,000 gallons of Chablis. And you can always tell the alcoholics are looking around, they want to get past the lecture. When do we get to the tasting room? But you can always tell you're an alcoholic when you're standing next to 50,000 gallons of Chablis, and you look at it and you go, "It ain't enough. It really ain't enough." And when you think about drinking the Chablis, when it goes through your mind about drinking the Chablis, you don't think about tasting in a glass. You think about lying down on the ground and having them pour it in your mouth. You know, you always like. But you see, to me, that's a normal way of thinking. I don't even think that's abnormal. Doesn't everybody think that way? Everybody I come around with thought that way, you know, and that's the deal. So I don't know, but I used to say if everybody gets an allotment of alcohol, 10,000, 50,000 gallons, and that's all you drink for your life, he says, my problem is I went through my allotment by the time I reached age 25. And I was always already working on my next-door neighbor's allotment. Now, I'm going to say the same thing, but the same thing applies to thinking. If everybody is allowed a certain number of thoughts and worries and cares and anxiety for their entire life, I used up my thinking at age 10. I was already using somebody else's thoughts. I mean, I had already gone through all the thoughts. I could not stop thinking. And there were always bad thoughts about myself and other people. So many bad thoughts. If we went through this room and sort of wrote them down, we could catalog them. And it was always about me. You know, I'd say things like to myself. You know, you talk to yourself. You know, I'm thinking about it. The person I probably spent the most time with in my entire life was me. No, really, up to and including now. I'm the person I spent my, you know, the person I spent the most time listening to was me. I don't know whether I love it. I don't know what it is. I love talking to myself. I talk to myself all the time. Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. I say things like, you're an asshole. You're a piece of shit. You don't deserve to live. You'll never get this thing. You'll never amount to it. You're a nothing. You're an idiot. You know, stuff like that. I don't say it for any particular reason. I just say it. I've been saying that stuff to myself ever since I can remember. I can't remember a time in my life where I didn't think I was an asshole. I can't remember a time in my life that I didn't tell myself I was a piece of shit. I can't ever remember a time in my life where I didn't feel I was an asshole or a piece of shit or a nothing. You know, except for the times when I thought I was greater than everybody else in the world and I ran the universe, which was sort of like oases in between those times, you know what I mean? Alcohol will help you with that. It'll take you from being an asshole and a piece of shit to king of the world until you become, but the problem is then, you know, after it wears off, you're an asshole again. Sometimes you're the asshole in the middle of it. But, you know, I don't really think anything crazy about that or that's wrong because, you know, that's my alcoholic thinking. That's the way I think. I feel so comfortable with that that I don't even think there's anything wrong with that. See, I'm talking to you right now. We're talking about this stuff. I wouldn't want to, I'm talking to you because you're alcoholics. So you see, what I know is I know you think that way too. See, I know that. I used to think nobody thought that way except me. And I felt unique. And I felt like nobody would understand. And how could anybody understand me? But after being around for 31 years and learning a little bit about the disease and sponsoring people, I know everybody thinks that way in here. Now, I wouldn't want to give this speech in front of the Kiwanis Club. I've done there. I've been there and done that. They don't react. You know, I went to a movie once called Clean and Sober. Remember the movie Clean and Sober? I don't know how many people saw that. It was one of the first Alky movies with Michael Keaton. It was, and everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous in Dade County went to this one theater to see it. Because it was the first real, like, 12-step Alky movie. And I'm going to tell you something. For my money, it's the best movie that was ever made. That movie. You got to see that movie. If you haven't seen it, you rent it or whatever it is, it's still good. It's a great movie. And it really tells it like it is. And I'll never forget, I was sitting in that movie and they had all these alcoholics there. People, you know, all of a sudden you would see everybody from AA. It was the first time. It was kind of exciting. I had about a year or two. And, you know, we were meeting our little covens and our little caves, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, there we are all at the falls. And the lobby is packed with people in AA. It was sort of like a mini convention, like when you go to an international and the whole town is taken over by AA. Like, it was like we were out of the closet, you know what I mean? And it was like our little secret. There were 300 of us, and we're all sort of winking and nodding to say, how you doing, you know? And only we knew that we were Alkies, you know what I mean? Because we didn't have signs or anything. It was so cool. And they had, but here's the deal. They had non-alcoholics there too. There were alcoholics mixed with non-alcoholics. And only the Alkies could sort of like tell the difference, you know what I mean? We had the secret codes and everything like that. So we went in the movie theater, and there were like alcoholics and non-alcoholics sitting together in the movie theater. And the first scene in Clean and Sober is Michael Keaton wakes up, obviously after a tough night, you know, and he's got a girl sleeping next to him in the nude, and he hits her on the ass, you know, he slaps her on the ass, and she doesn't wake up, and he slaps her again, and she's dead. Died of an overdose in her sleep. Young girl. And all the Alkies started laughing. I can't explain it. They all started laughing at the same time. They thought it was the greatest thing in the world. It was like, you know, like you go to Alcoholics Anonymous and says, and then I killed my mother, and everybody starts laughing, you know, and then I drank, you know, and then everybody starts laughing the most. And all the non-alcoholics looked at the alcoholics like they were crazy. They didn't know they were alcoholics. They didn't know what to laugh at. They thought it was the most tragic thing in the world. You know, that's when I first started realizing that our alky way of thinking is the normal way of thinking, but it's not like the way other people think. I mean, we think like everybody else. We don't think like everybody else. Other people don't walk around thinking they're pieces of shit. I mean, there's probably some sick people that are not alcoholics that think that way, but for the most part, they don't think they're pieces of shit. They don't think they should die. They don't think they don't deserve to live. You know what I mean? They don't think that way. You know, and that's the way I thought all my life. You know, and you know, every once in a while, or you'll say things like this. And I, you know, I say this all the time. This is sort of like a comical. I say, I don't give a crap what they think about me. I don't give a crap what they think about me. I don't really give a crap what they think about me. I don't care what they think about me. You know? Somebody will come up to you and says, you know what so-and-so said thought about you? What? He says, I don't give a crap what he thinks about me. Then you spend the next, what, 6 years thinking about that guy? And you ultimately learn that people, and you know what? Here's the crazy thing. You tell yourself so many times you don't give a crap what people think about you. This is what you think. You think, you ready for this? That you don't give a crap what people think about you. But the only problem is you can't stop thinking about the guy who said that about you. You can't stop thinking what other people think about you, even though you keep on telling yourself, I don't give a crap what other people think about you. You know? Because people who really don't think what other people think about them don't say, I don't give a crap what other people think about me. They say, you know, pass the sugar, pass the salt. You know, they don't even care. They're not even curious. And it's these little things, I don't give a crap what they think about me. I wish I was dead and all that sort of stuff that we say and we do that's the fabric of our lives. That's our life. That's our thought. You know these thoughts? You know where I said there's like a billion thoughts and we've used them? You know, if at 15 years old I used up all the thoughts I was allotted in life, 80% of them were thoughts like, I don't give a shit what they think about me, who the hell they think they are, they don't know who they're screwing with, I'll show them. They can't do this to me. Why is this always happening to me? You know what I mean? They're thoughts like that. Negative thoughts about me and about other people. It's always about me and other people. It's never about me and like the wall. It's never about me and like the table. It's not never about me and my foot. It's all about me. Always about, it's always negative thoughts, bad thoughts about me and you, about me and you. It's all about somehow, some way, it all gets down to this. I don't deserve to live and I'm a piece of shit and you're better than me. And I don't know what to do about that. Every thought gets down to that. You know? So the teacher says, does anybody have a question? I have a question. I don't understand. But what if it's a stupid question? So I don't raise my hand. Because I'm what? I don't want anybody to laugh at me. I don't want people to think I'm stupid. Or if anybody says, does anybody know the answer? I know the answer, but I want to raise my hand. Because what if I'm wrong? And so my whole life, 90% of these worthless bullshit thoughts are bad thoughts about me and other people. You know, but if you drink, that helps, by the way. Drinking helps that shit. It does, you know. Because you can walk into a bar worrying about whether other people accept you, whether the group will accept you, and you can have a few pops, you know, a few drinks, and then you own the group. You know what I mean? You can go up to a girl and say, you want to dance? He says, no. He says, you're lost, sweetheart. You know what I mean? It sort of like transforms you. You know what I mean? You're laughing. You don't understand what that deal's all about, you know? So that's, and you want some? That's the way we think sober. Now, every once in a while, here's the real scary thing. Let me give you something else to think about. Wait. Every once in a while, you actually notice you're saying, you know, if you're an alcoholic and you don't go to these meetings, you talk like that to yourself all the time, but you don't know you're talking about yourself. You don't know you're talking to yourself like that all the time because that's just the way you talk to yourself. You understand what I'm saying? So you don't say, why am I talking about you? You just talk to yourself that way. And even if you actually get a glimpse of you talking to yourself the other way, you sort of like blame somebody else or think so. You don't really understand how it, but here's the deal. Once in a blue moon, you may say to yourself, all of a sudden you may notice it, that you're calling yourself a piece of shit. You'll be in the shower lathering up and you'll say, I'm an asshole, I'm an idiot. And you'll realize you're doing it. Maybe after this meeting, all of a sudden you'll be driving around an hour or two from now because we're talking about it. And something will happen and you'll say, what an asshole I am. Or something like, I'm an asshole. You say, man, that's what Russell was talking about. And you'll like notice it, you know what I mean? So it'll be apparent to you that you're doing it. But here's the real crazy thing, and I believe this is true. Even though we may notice it every once in a while, I believe even when we're not saying it to ourselves, it's playing in the background all the time like music. In other words, I don't think it like goes to Venus and retires for, you know, 6 months until it comes back again. I think the person who says, I'm a piece of shit, I'm worthless, and things like that, you know, out loud or to themselves, I don't think when they're not saying that, it like retires to Miami Beach for 6 months. I think that tape is playing all the time, whether we hear it or not, in our subconscious. You know, that's what it says in this book. It says that tape, that sucker is playing all the time in its subconscious. Now, let me ask you something. This is just, I don't know, I'm just throwing this out. Do you think that's a good way to be or a bad way to be? Well, I'm going to guess you think like I think. That's probably not a good deal. That may have something to do, you know, it says alcoholics are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So the point is, what they're saying is, the nature of the disease of alcoholism is to be restless, irritable, discontented if you're sober, not if you're drinking. That's what we drank. We drank because it's the only thing that worked. No woman, no matter clothes, ever worked just as well as just a few drinks. What did it work on? It worked on, you're a piece of shit. You're an idiot. You're an asshole. You're stupid. You know, all that's, it worked on all that, that, you know, like I said to my sponsor, I'm sensitive. He says, you know, great artists are sensitive. You're just touching. It worked on that, taking that stuff personally, feeling crappy about yourself, that low self-esteem. That's what it worked on. That's where alcoholism lives. And it's with us all the time. Now imagine this. You're making decisions about your act, your life. You're thinking about people. You know, it says the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real. It could be imaginary crap. You know what I mean? You know, the two psychiatrists, one says hi, the other one says, I wonder what he meant by that. You know, it's just we just imagine stuff. You know what I mean? That we overreact to. And that's the real alcoholism. That's why when you stop drinking, and all for a momentary period, you get elated, and then 3 months later, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, your mind's going 5,000 miles per hour. You know, you're going to die, you're stupid, you're an idiot, you're never going to do this, what's going to happen to you? And all you're thinking about when you can't get to sleep, you know what you're thinking about, by the way? You're thinking about people. You're thinking about people. You're either thinking about a specific person or specific people, or you're thinking about generally the entire world that's going to realize that you're a phony and you're an idiot and you're stupid. And it just runs your entire, it just runs your life. Sometimes it's really apparent, sometimes it's not apparent. Your whole life is run about fear of people and feeling that you're not measuring up. You're always measuring your inside by somebody else's outside. Everybody looks smarter and better and more well-equipped and everything than you do. You're like faking, I'm like faking it. You know, and that's the deal. And you're saying things like, who's going to be there? Is he going to be there? I'm not going if they're going to be there. I mean, there's so many things we say, so many things we think, so many things we are. Fear runs our lives so much about other people. You know, you understand what I'm saying? So that we don't even realize it until we get in here and we get a few years and we start looking back and going through these steps and everything, start realizing, and we're the ones who think, hey, I'm my own man. You know, what's that Frank Sinatra song? I did it my way. Right. No, I did it your way. I did it your way. Whatever you wanted me to be, that's who I was going to be. It was always running through the filter, well, what will they think about me if I do this? What will they think about me if I do that? Even in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm a big God guy. You know, I'm a Christian guy. I go do Bible stuff and everything like that. And I'm not foisting that upon you. That's my story. You know, it says right here in the big book, it says we talk about how we found it. That's part of it. I'm a Jewish kid from New York who did that deal. That's my deal. It doesn't have to be your deal, okay? So don't freak out about it. But the bottom line is, don't you know, for years I would never even mention this or do that or anything. Why? Because I'm worried about some banana in the back road, you know, looking at me funny. Like, what business is of it his? Do your thing the way you want to do. I'll do my thing the way I want to do. You know, they don't like me, they'll stop inviting me to meetings. You know what I mean? But that's the whole nature of alcoholism. Hiding out, being scared, blending in, not saying, not doing anything, playing the game, doing whatever you have to do so not to be rejected. So worried about, will they like me, will they not like me, everything like that. Like, anybody gives a crap. I got to have a new car, I got to have a new blouse, I got to change my hair, I got to do this, why? So people will like me, everything, because I'm so unlikable and unworthy on my own. You know, and that has something to do with booze. I mean, booze is what we use to get away from that, and now we're not using the booze, and we got no way of getting away with that because that's the way we think. That's the way I think. It's just a horrible, horrible situation, you know, and you don't, and it is so natural, and we do it so all the time, we don't even know why. All we know is I feel crappy. All we know is, like James said, I had a crappy day. I had a horrible day. I had a terrible, you know, I had a terrible time. It was a terrible day. I've had a terrible week. I had a terrible year. You know, this decade's been horrible for me. You know what I mean? You know? This is pure alcoholism. You know? And we're just sort of like, and you know, these steps are just sort of getting us, allowing, you know, God to come. And I think to myself now, and I got to tell you this, and I'll just say this once. You know, I don't want anybody to get the opinion that, well, thank God I'm cured of this thing. I never, ever think, gee, why did he say that? But, you know, well, that's not true. I don't think you ever get cured until they lower you into the ground. You know what I mean? But I got to tell you something. There is a big, big difference between having what I'll call a self-defeating thought, you know, once every 3 days for a minute or a second, and having it run in your mind all the time. There is such an incredible freedom. You know, when they talk about, it says, you know, after 8 and 9, it says you're going to be amazed before you're halfway done. If you're not amazed yet, it's because you're not halfway done. But I mean, that's what it says. You can be amazed. And one of the amazements that happens slowly but surely over a period of time is you are absolutely amazed at the incredible new freedom there is of not having to think. I don't know how to explain it any differently. I know there are people, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday at a meeting or doing a meeting yesterday or something, and I said, you know, when I tell people, you know, people come to me and says, what do you think about this? I say, I don't. Not only don't I, I'm not going to. I can't tell you how much I don't think. I can't, and let me tell you something. I was a thinker. I got high grades in college and in postgraduate. I did all these thinking courses, logical courses, and all this. I was a big believer in running the world and being successful through outthinking everybody and showing everybody how smart you are. And I can't tell you how much, hey, ignorance really is bliss to a certain extent. I can't tell you how easy it is to get along the world if you cut out like 95% of your thinking. Let me tell you something. If I have to go to the bathroom, I don't have to think about it. I just know. And if I'm tired and I need to go to sleep, there's like no thought whatsoever. As a matter of fact, the more I think about getting tired, the harder it is to get to sleep. And when I'm hungry, I don't have to think at all. Like 90% of the most important things that I got to do in my day, no thought is involved at all. As a matter of fact, the biggest problem is the more thought, I got to keep it simple, the more thought I put into sleeping, eating, and going to the bathroom, the worse off I am. You know, I find that when I deal with people, 95% of my interactions with people today are intuitive. They call it inspirational thinking. Somebody will ask me a question, and I'll know exactly how to respond to it with very little thinking. I just respond to the question. Somebody say they'll have a problem with something, and I respond to the situation. Sometimes somebody will say something, and I won't respond at all. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, you'd be amazed how well you can do if you're not operating on fear or anxiety, and you're just meeting the situation head on where you're at from a position of peace and serenity. You'd be surprised. And you'd be surprised how much you can screw up a relationship and screw up everything if all you're doing is overthinking. How do I sound? What do I say? What does this mean? What are they doing? You'd be surprised how you can almost go through an entire day and almost walk away from every interaction with anybody on the street and somehow feel crappy about it. So by the end of the day, you are the sum total of a million crappy feelings about people and about the situation. It's almost like, what do they call it? A pinball machine. Every person you bumped into from the traffic jam and everything, by the end of the day, say, who needs this frippin' world? Nothing's going right. When actually nothing has happened that's bad, except what's going on in your mind, the chatter that's going on in your mind. It's amazing. I wish I could explain to you. I wish I could take 30 years. Or 31 years, or whatever it is, I put in your brain for 5 minutes. And you know, it's hard to believe because I'll put it to you this way. You remember when you couldn't stop drinking? This is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I hope I'm not the only one. No, I'm serious. There was a time in my life, I swear to God, I'm not kidding about this. I know you know I'm not kidding, where I didn't think I could ever stop drinking. I couldn't envision a life without drinking. If you told me you weren't drinking, I'd say, how the hell did you do that? I couldn't. Anybody remember that? There must be people closer than I am. I'm 30. You remember that? Okay. Okay, so you remember when you thought you could never stop drinking? You really believe that, right? Mm-hmm. You can never stop drinking. You can never stop thinking about drinking. Your whole life revolved around drinking. And now, you're not drinking, right? You're not even thinking about drinking, right? You know, you're living a great life. You're not even drinking. You don't even want to drink, right? So you go up to somebody now who's an alcoholic. And you say to them, you know, you don't have to drink. And they look at you like you're a banana. They don't understand what you're talking about. And you can't even explain, and even though it's the truth, you know what I mean? They don't believe you. You can't explain to them. You can't explain anything to them. All they can do is hear your testimony, and they somehow believe you, and they come in here. But you can't explain to them that one day you couldn't stop drinking just like them, and now all of a sudden you don't want to drink. They don't understand what that's all about because they've never experienced it. So you're going to have to just believe me when I tell you the day will come. I know you're thinking a lot. You know, I'm not saying this applies to everybody. We've got a large group. I know you're thinking a lot. I know there's a lot of thinking going on. I know there's a lot of worrying going on. I know there's a lot of anxiety going on. I know it's like, you know, that Saturday Night Live lady says, you know, there's always something. I know there's always something going on. I know there's always a crisis. I know there's terrible things happen. I know everybody's going bankrupt. I know you're going to die of cancer. I know horrible things are going to happen. I know there's things going on in your life you don't have. I know you can't talk about it to anybody because nobody will understand. I know there's a million things going on. I know you wish you could kill you. I know you don't know how you're going to do this. I know all about that stuff. I don't know how to explain this to you, okay? The time's going to come if you do this thing, you're not going to worry about any of that stuff anymore. It's going to be gone. It's going to be like the drinking. You know, you don't drink now, you don't want to drink. I don't think now, and I don't want to think. You understand what I'm saying? Can you imagine what that would be like? What do you think that would be like? That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? You know, that'd be a cool deal, right? You wouldn't be all nervous and everything, and ill at ease of people. You wouldn't be at ill at ease of yourself. You wouldn't be calling yourself a piece of crap. You wouldn't be thinking bad. I mean, no thoughts. Can you imagine what that would be? It's hard to imagine that, isn't it? You just have to believe me. That's the deal. That's what happens in this thing. And it all happens around this step, 8 and 9. That's what these things are all about, relationships with people. That's why right after this thing it says, if you're painstaking about this, all sorts of remarkable things are going to happen. You're going to have to know a new freedom, new friend. That's why they talk about this stuff. You'll lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. Most of our fear of economic insecurity is really not even fear of economic insecurity. Nobody here is really worried about not being able to eat. You've been eating all your life. You're worried about what people think about you if they know you're broke. You're worried about people. You're worried about, you're scared they'll think you're a loser. You're worried about, you know, judging yourself because you've judged yourself all along by what you think other people are thinking about. You actually think they're thinking about you. They care. You know, most, and it says fear of people will leave you. Can you imagine what a fear of people, if it really left you, what you would be like? It'd be incredible. It'd be an incredible deal, right? It's all around 8 and 9. All these steps are preparing you for 8 and 9 to be free of this stuff. So you can just focus on him. Just focus on his deal. Because if you focus on him, you don't have to focus on them. Yeah, you can either focus on him. You see, if you build a relationship with him, you don't have anything to worry about because, you know, in his eyes, you're the greatest thing since Swiss cheese. He's like walking around with a wallet that's got your picture in it. He's like crazy about you. You don't even have to worry about this one thinks about you. You don't have to worry. You see, if you do what they say in this book, listen, if you do what they say in this book and you stay close to him and perform his work well, then you don't have anything. You're never going to call yourself a piece of crap because you know he loves you and he's crazy about you and you're the best thing in the world. And you're just fine. You're fantastic. So why should you worry about what she thinks about you or what he thinks about you or this guy, some alcoholic that doesn't even pay your Visa bill, think about you? All you got to be concerned about is what he thinks about you. And if you love him and he loves you, what do you care what anybody else thinks about you? But you're never going to get there if you base your life having faith in her or him or this one or that one. They're always going to let you down, not because they're bad people, but because they're people. They're not God. You know, it says if you sincerely make the decision, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, he gives you anything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. That's out of our book. Because he's all powerful. There's nobody in here that's all powerful. Not even this group is all powerful. Not even the AA trustees are all powerful. Not even Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole is all powerful. Not even the United States of America is all powerful. Not anything in the world is all powerful. He's all powerful. I'd rather sort of like hang out with him and think about what he thinks about me. You know, as long as I'm content that he thinks I'm doing okay, why would I worry about what you think? I just want to talk about what he thinks about me, you know, because he's the one who really loves people and cares about me. Why should I think about that other stuff? And that's what the 8th and 9th step is all about. It's about relationships. And somehow it comes after step 3. You ever notice that? It comes after step 3, where we sincerely make all that decision about God. Somehow God plays into this deal. I like this line in step 8. I read this over about 5 times today, just for comic effect, okay? You know, they sort of lump, even though they are separate steps, they lump them together. In the big book, they lump them together. And in the 12 and 12, they say, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. That's a quote out of James, the book of James. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we had harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to this drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. And then it talks a little bit more about that. You know, one of the things, and this is a little bit of a separate thing, but it's part of the same deal. I sort of wanted to talk about it, and I'm not quite sure how to put it together, so I'll just... There is something about understanding. Now, this is going to sound crazy, and I'm just going to say it, and I'm not even sure how it's going to come out. Because I got to be honest with you, I haven't figured it out myself. I've talked about low self-esteem. You know, I've been talking about saying you're a piece of shit and thinking you're a piece of shit and how bad that is. You know what I mean? How horrible that is. Now, I'm just going to tell you something. There's something that's very important, very, very important about being so honest with yourself and getting so honest with yourself that you realize how horrible you are. Now, I can't explain that to you, and it may seem to you to be paradoxical, contradictory. I have a tendency to minimize the real bad crap in me and excuse it and rationalize it and not see it. And the people I hurt, the things I do, I can tell myself rationalize. I can say, well, it wasn't that bad. I never hurt anybody except myself and everything like that. And another tendency on the other side to beat myself up for crap that I shouldn't even beat myself up for. And, you know, they say the most important thing is the capacity to be honest. There's something very, very healthy and refreshing with truthfully. You remember we were talking about seeing through a glass darkly? Seeing where you really did screw up. And where really the things you think you screwed up weren't that bad at all. We just have a strange way of looking at things in here where we never quite get it right as alcoholics. The stuff that we should really feel guilty about, where we've really hurt people and continue to hurt people and continue to act badly, we don't even see it, we justify it, and we continue to do it. And the stuff that we're really not hurting people that much or we really didn't do anything that bad, we beat the crap out of ourselves. We're just all screwed up in our motives, in our values, and things like that. We tell ourselves we didn't do anybody any damage except ourselves, and we're neglecting our wives and our husbands and our children, spending money on crap that we should be spending money on them, you know, doing all sorts of things, hurting people's feelings. We sit around and feel sorry for ourselves and depressed, not even understanding that we're bringing the entire family down or hurting other people. We don't even see the fathers and mothers, and we don't even see the crap we're doing to other people. And even if we see it, it's no big deal. We don't, because you want to know something? If you hurt my feelings, that's good for 10 years of feeling sorry for myself because you hurt me. Look what you did to me. But if I rip your lungs out, you know, what's the big deal? What are you so sorry about? What's the big deal? What are you being such a baby about? You don't have any right to feelings. You got to get over it right away. You're bringing me down. You know what I mean? We just have a whole crazy way of thinking. So in the same token, there is something very refreshing and helpful and necessary about becoming honest with God and honest with yourself and honest with your fellow man as to really where you screwed up and what you screwed up. And I'm not sure we could ever do it 100% perfect. Any of these things aren't 100% perfect. But really, honestly, making a list and seeing where we really screwed up with the help of a sponsor going over with them and where we can make amends. That's where the magic starts happening. But here's the funny line. I don't know what it's funny. I found it was kind of funny, but it's true. They say in the 12 and 12, steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. And third, having thus cleared away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. I mean, that's cool, the best possible relationships with every human being we know. Now, this is the comical part. This is a very large order. It is a task we may perform with increasing skill, but never really finish learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description. It's a moving and fascinating adventure. It's a moving and fascinating adventure. So, you know, James, when you told me that some guy on the street owes you $200, you'd like to have the money, just remember, you shouldn't get upset with him, because it's just a moving and fascinating adventure. And so when you go out tomorrow morning on I-95, on I-95 in that traffic, and some guy almost clips you and then shoots the bird at you, just look at him and say, what an adventure. This is a moving and fascinating adventure. So I can learn how to be at greatest peace and partnership with this guy. And so as people come into your life and beat you up and hurt you and do all sorts of vicious things with you, real and imaginary, what you do is, instead of saying, well, you suck, or you, or whatever you're going to say, I can't believe that act, you know, who the, does it, you say this, you say, this is an adventure. You know, Terry, you know those guys you work with over there? It's an adventure. We're all involved in a moving and fascinating adventure. Now, here's the deal. Well, it is. It's like a video game. You know, it's like a video game. That's the jerk off. That's the this guy. That's the guy. You learn how to live, and it's like an adventure. After a while, you're looking for these people so you can get more adventurous. You know what I mean? That's what happens. Every AA has found that he can make little headway in this new adventure of living until he first backtracks and makes and actually looks at exactly who he is. Because here's the deal. What the deal is, and this is what happens with me, is I've been a victim all my life. Man, I'll tell you. Don't you hate victims? I mean, I don't know. Have you ever been in an AA meeting where the victim's talking? You haven't been to enough AA meetings, you know? I mean, listen, it's so thank God I don't run AA, because, man, and I am a victim. I was a victim, you know what I mean? We're all victims, you know? It wasn't my fault. It was never my fault. I was a victim, okay? There's nothing that I can't stand worse than a victim talking in an AA meeting, especially if it goes for more than 30 seconds. And, you know, they always go for more than 30 seconds. You know these guys that raise their hand, you know, you know, first of all, whoever invented the burning desire has to be shot. He should be shot or gone. You know, you have an incredible AA meeting. Everybody's uplifted and say, is there anybody here who's the sickest son of a bitch in the place that wants to bring us all down right now for 10 minutes? You know what I mean? Anybody have a what's that burning desire crap? You know, Joe Stein used to say that. So, anybody have a burning desire? Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but I wanted to... And then they start for 5 minutes, and you want to ring there, and you want to shoot them, you know what I mean? Everybody walks out, I need another meeting after that one, right? It's a moving and fascinating adventure. Well, listen, we all start off as victims in here. We're all victims, you know? We're all yes, but you don't understand, you know, my situation is different, you don't know what it's like. We're all victims, and it gets us nowhere. Nowhere. It gets us nowhere, right? We're all victims. Somehow, some way, when you get that list going and you bring down all the people you've hurt in your life, and you've written down in detail, you know, not like I was a bad actor or anything, exactly what you did, you understand? And you see who you really are and who you really are. Let me tell you something. It becomes really easy to cut people slack. You know, it comes really easy to say, but for the grace of God. I mean, it comes really easy to say. Life doesn't seem that tough when you can say, who am I to criticize? I've done the same thing and worse. You know what I mean? It wasn't 2 years ago there you weren't robbing, stealing, cheating, and doing it. It wasn't 2 years ago where you weren't lying, where you weren't doing that stuff. All of a sudden, when you see somebody else do that stuff, it's hard to get really mad at them, because you're saying, yeah, I remember when I did the same thing. That guy, you could sort, you know how they say, do unto others the way you think you want them to do unto you. I mean, you can actually, we never are able to do this, you know, put ourselves in other people's shoes. Even bad people's shoes, you know what I mean? Now, we may not like their actions. We may not appreciate it. We may say this is unacceptable. You know, may even spank them a little or say, listen, you better get your act together. We say, look, I'm not hanging out with you as long as you do that. But the hatred, the anger, The resentment, that's gone because we realize that they're sick people, just like we were sick. We just have a different perspective. You know, when you have the perspective that you're the victim and you're Mary Magdalene, you are the Virgin Mary. When you are the Virgin Mary or you are Jesus Christ and you are the greatest and you're such a victim and you're so wonderful and the world is all screwed up, it's a tough way to live. When you think you're so great and you're such a victim, you know what I mean? When you realize, you know, how despicable you can be and how horrible you can be and you're not as wonderful as you think you are, and many times you're just really selfish and self-centered and you really see that stuff and you really see you need the grace of God, you really see how bad you are, let me tell you something, it becomes a lot easier to live in this world with these people because you realize nobody's that much different than you. You know what I mean? You're pretty much, you know, you're just fortunate if you can get out of that deal. So these 8 and 9, this is what 8 does. It lets you see this stuff, you know. We're going to talk a little bit about 9 next week. And once you start seeing this stuff, and the thing sort of, you know, obviously, one of the things you want to get rid of is guilt. Guilt is a bummer. You know, that's one of the, part of these bad thoughts. Part of this, I'm an asshole. You know, I say to my sponsor, I feel guilty. He says, that's because you are. I feel guilty. You are guilty. That's why you feel guilty, because you are guilty. And sometimes I was guilty for stuff I shouldn't feel guilty of, but I was not guilty for stuff I should have felt guilty for. You know, that's what happens when the 4th step and the 8th step when we do these things. And so one of the things I have to get rid of, I don't want to walk around with you. I don't want to walk around feeling less than. I don't want to walk around feeling like a piece of crap or, you know, a failure. I don't want to walk around like that. You don't want to walk around like that, you know. You're going to eventually drink again because you're not going to be happy with your sobriety. You're just going to be like hanging in there, you know. People are going to affect you. So when you do that deal, and when you're constantly involved in that way of thinking, that's alcoholism. That's alcoholism. You know what I mean? You're going to be prone to all sorts of spiritual diseases and everything. You're never going to feel good about this deal. You're always going to feel like you're just barely making it. You're always going to be feeling, when am I going to start feeling okay? It's always going to be a crappy deal. You know what I mean? You start hanging in this thing. You got to persevere. Now I got to tell you something. And this is just my own deal. If you're going through some stuff, you got it 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, 5 years, 3 years, whatever it is, and you're going through the deal, let me tell you something, it doesn't happen like that. It just doesn't happen like that. You know what I mean? I'm talking, I've been around for 31 years. It started getting real good for me around 20 years. Was that like a nervous laugh? Yeah. Is that like a laugh like you think I'm lying to you?
I'm hoping.
Well, you know something? Well, but listen, you know the good thing about hearing crap like that is now you don't have to panic about it. You don't have to say, well, I got 16 years. How come I'm not wonderful? You say, hey, Russell was, you know, thinking about this crap, you know, for 20 years. You know, why, you know, things take time. It takes time to, that's what keeps out the pretenders. Why should, you know, that's what we want. That's what alcoholics want. You want things easy. You want things handed to you. You don't have to go through 20. You want 20 minutes. You want a Xanax. You want, I mean, why, no, listen, why should you wait? Why should you wait 20 years of working this thing in order to get into the real deal? Why should you work 20 years when you used to take a bottle of scotch and swig it and get it in 20 seconds? That's what you want. You want 20 seconds. Okay, you'll give it a year. Oh, you'll give it 5 years. You'll give it 10 years. You're like cutting this, at 15 years, you're like barely cutting the surface of this deal. You start talking about 20 years, 25 years, now you're talking about something. You know, you shouldn't feel bad about that. You should feel good about that. You know, because you guys would be somewhere in 20 years. Why not here? You're going to be somewhere in 20 years and 25 years. You might as well hang around and wait for the miracle. You know, hey, if you happen to be one of the lucky ones and get it after 10 years, well, God bless you. You know what I mean? Took me long. Now, I don't want you to make it sound like it was horrible. Or it was terrible, or it's not like that. You understand what I'm saying? You get progressively better, but you go through rough times. You absolutely go through rough times at 9 years, 12 years, whatever it is. You go through whatever you have to go through to sandpaper down the bullshit and show you whenever you're upset, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you, and point you what has to be sandpapered down and what's still left over from your old life that you have to deal with so you don't get away with getting this good stuff for nothing. You're going to be working this thing and working this thing and working this thing until you sandpaper down all the edges and all the stuff so that you can move through life and things don't affect you that much. And why? Because you've been through all the crap 15, 16, 2,000 times. You've worked the steps. You've worked your sponsor. And now you're in, you know, pretty good shape. And even then, there's still more stuff coming on. You know, they wait till you get in your 60s and 70s and they bring on the cancer and they bring on all that other stuff. You know what I mean? You bring out, no, you, they bring out, you don't think that happens?
No, it happens.
and wait till you're 60, 70, and you know, you're married 30 years, and then your wife dies, your kid dies, stuff. They bring down, none of the other stuff happens, but that's okay. Because you're so used to dealing with that stuff, it doesn't affect you that much. I mean, that's life. I'm talking about life. You know, this isn't fairy tale land. This is the real deal. This is how it happens. You know, every, you know, it's like, you know, every year there's something, you know, to, you know, it's like that song. It's not the song, it's out of the Bible. Every year it comes, there's a time for everything. There's a time for being born, for dying, you know, for falling in love, for falling out of love, for divorce, for marriage, for kids, for that. There's a time for everything. You'll go through the whole bit. You'll go through it sober. You get to the other end, life will be fantastic. It'll be great. Great things. It'll be, it's unbelievable. You drive around, I get a call today from some gal. This is so-and-so. Hi, I didn't even know who, you don't remember me? No, I don't. You know, you helped me get into AA 8 years ago, you know, and you helped me out in so-and-so. I just want to know I brought somebody else to the room, and I just want to call you up and thank you. It just happened 3 hours ago. I want to thank you. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Where are you going to the rooms now? She starts telling me. I said, well, thank you. God bless you. Thank you very much. That's kind of you to say that, you know. You know, I mean, wonderful things happen while you hang. You just have to hang around. You got to do the. You got to do the scud work. Just got to do the work and get it and get past this thing so you can stop the thinking and all the craziness and stuff like that. Write down that 8-step list. Reading the big book tells you how to do it. The 12 and 12 tells you how to do it. It's just a list. It comes out of the 4-step list. Next week we'll talk about step 9. Thank you very much.